It is Thursday, the 31st of October, and this is episode 187 of Digital Outbox. We should do a spooky episode, right?
I'm guessing that was you thinking I'm going to do a spooky intro
and then did chicken out. Then,
yeah.
Absolutely. There we go. I'm expecting knocks at the door for trick or treats all the way through this podcast, of which I shall be ignoring.
Send them packing.
I'm going to throw sweets at them out the window.
Just turn on a Daily Mail reader and tell them, go home. Go back to your own country.
What? Okay, so this podcast is going to turn out to be a bit of a Google fest, I feel.
I think everything's Google apart from like three stories.
All right, so let's start with a non-Google to lure you in. And this is, anyone who's been flying knows that they have to turn off their devices at least take off and landing and leave in airplane mode. Well, they're going to start relaxing that in the US. So they have given provisional okays for people to have devices on at takeoff and landing, and even using cellular network up in air above 10,000 feet, I think it is. Is that right?
Yes.
I think it's been known for a long time that really there's no reason to do this anymore with all the protection they have against their flight controls and their avionics. But it's, you know, they're cautious for good reason, I guess.
Considering Brian was texting me when I was about 2 minutes out of Bristol Airport and the plane didn't crash, I think we can safely say...
Oh, you're one of those knobs.
Yeah, and you'll be one of those knobs sitting next to me going, oh, you do know you're supposed to turn that off. How about I punch you in the face?
Quite right too, you rule-breaking. And when they all crash down, they can all point at you.
This is great news.
Yeah, and although CAA, so we haven't followed suit yet, they will be keeping a close eye, you can be sure. Although the CAA does tend to be a little bit more reserved, it has to be said.
So this has been talked about in America for months. The announcements came today, and the reason I carried the British story, because they have got a quote saying relaxation of rules may have a knock-on effect. As a spokesman, and that was a spokesman from the CAA, and hopefully... it will be applied in the next months?
As soon as all the planes don't crash and fall out of the sky in America, then everyone will follow suit, basically. But let the Americans take that risk. Samsung they basically had a developer conference. They are that big now that they thought they'd get in on the act and have a developer conference. And at that developer conference, there's been some sort of interesting revelations that they're releasing tons and tons and tons of SDKs and stuff, but this is specific Samsung SDKs on top of Android, which kind of is moving. It's almost like they're branching. I think that's the kind of impression I'm getting.
Yeah, and I guess it's even more of an extension of like Amazon, you know. So Amazon's kind of built on Android, but they've got their own store and they've got their own kind of,
yeah, we'll call it Android down, in inverted commas, right? Because it's yeah, really not Android, it's just Amazon. It's using it's leveraging.
And I think that's why maybe as geekier folk got quite excited about, you know, with Nexus devices and these kind of pure Google experiences, because you just want Android, you don't want all the TouchWiz, you don't want all the different UIs that a lot of the phone makers have put on top. But Samsung are saying, hold on, our devices are like massively the device to have, you know. So if you go and look at the, you know, HTC struggling, you know, Motorola, yeah
and HTC, you know, and, you know, and LG, they've been universally acclaimed for making great devices, but they just haven't caught on in the consumer market like they needed it to, really.
And Samsung are, I think only Sony are the only other kind of equivalents that jump to mind that have got they've got devices across, you know, everywhere. You know, so if you look at Samsung, they're saying we're the, you know, we've got the most smart TVs out there. So one of the SDKs that they released is all about, you know, putting your UI on a smart TV and having some sort of control from, you know, a mobile device.
Yeah, what it's doing effectively is a bit, you know, it's compressing the market and saying all these things are going to be available to Samsung users, but they're not going back into the main Android branch. Now, advantages and disadvantages of that, if they get it all sorted and make it a really nice user experience, then they will, using all their people, that they've got all their customers on board, they will, you know, really solidify their position. If they cock up, then that could be it for Samsung. Because they're trying to move away from Google. Like you said, there's no mention of Google anyway, really, in their talks. So in that respect, if they cock up, at least it doesn't affect other Android devices.
Yes. And it actually reminded me of Apple. I mean, when you look at things like AirPlay, so Apple have taken something that was, you know, out there as a generic, you know, everybody can use it, and they've, you know, put in a secret sauce, made it proprietary, charged loads of money for it, and it's been wildly popular. And one of the new SDKs Samsung's brought out is this multi-screen SDK. So you can, you know, take a video or a music track on your phone, press a button, and it appears on your TV. And it was like, all sounds very familiar.
Yeah, as long as you're willing to embed yourself in the Samsung ecosystem. And I'm not sure that they hold quite that sway. You know, people aren't so embedded. Then, you know, someone with a Samsung device doesn't necessarily have a Samsung TV. Although they've sold a lot of both, doesn't mean that one person is going out to you know, really go and get embedded in this environment like they do with Apple.
I think that's true, but I'm surprised how much loyalty and brand awareness have brought up in their phone market. I now see people talking about, oh, when's the next Samsung? When's the next Samsung? Which 2 years ago, you just didn't see.
That's fair enough. And you're right. And they are getting that. But if they keep piling crapware on top of more crapware, which I think I've yet to find. That's not true. I would say a majority of the things that they've added onto their devices so far have been gimmicky, and most people don't end up using them. Things like scrolling with your eyes and stuff, because they don't really work. But they look great in tech demos, and in theory, when you hear about it, it sounds amazing. But a bit like parallax scrolling on iOS, it just doesn't really work in reality. It's just a bit pointless.
No, definitely. And I think they did become like, I think they just went a step too far this year with the Galaxy 4.
Crapware.
It was just too much. I mean, I keep on seeing the camera mode, and it has things like a golf mode, and it'll trap all your swing, and it's got like 30 different photo modes in it. And
this
like
is
too much.
I mean, this could be the death by 100 cuts or 1,000 cuts that they, you know, that just say crapware on top of crapware. We used to bemoan Nokia for piling stuff on top. And can we just get rid of all this? And I think people will eventually come back to the fact that this is a phone. I only want that core functionality, and that's what the Nexus is offering. Google's, you know, core offering is, you know, this is Android, you know, just, and that's it. And I think people will start appreciating that as time goes on. So we'll see whether it really is. I mean, it's like I say, it could, if they really get it right, it can lock all those customers into being Samsung customers rather than Android customers.
I think we'll only know maybe a year from now. This is our first conference. It's a 1,300 attendees,
yes, okay, a lot of developers are interested in the conference, but it doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be interested in using those APIs. And, you know, they don't really want to put all their eggs in one basket, really. That's the whole point of Android, is you don't want to do that.
No.
So, yeah, we'll see whether they get traction on it. Google has upgraded, they've upgraded Google Glass. So if we spoke about this, probably a year ago they started releasing these, wasn't it, to developers?
I think they obviously demoed it last year, and I think it was about 6 months, 8 months ago that I think a lot of these Explorer editions came out, because I think it was last year's I/O.
That's it. So that's when they let people pre-order it for $1,500. So it's not cheap, but people did pick them up. But anyway, they've upgraded the hardware now, and they're offering the people that did pick them up already the ability to swap, a one-time swap for the new hardware, which apparently is going to be important going forward when they actually want to mass produce these things. And they're also offering the people that are on the I don't know what the program, I think is what you call it, the ability to invite more friends.
I think it was the Explorers. I think they call them Explorers.
You are right.
Explorer participants. So seemingly if you've got one already, you can now invite three friends who can hand over $1,500 and get a Google Glass.
Yeah, I think they could invite people before, but now it's expanded even more, so they can invite even more people. So they're basically rolling out gently here, you know, maybe coming to more final hardware and, say, seeing how the interaction between people works. You also get sort of a mono earbud now.
Which is the worst looking piece of tat I've ever seen in my life. So and don't get
get
it
you!
Wrong. No, honestly. I mean, it's like, so Google Glass, right, there's lots of people were saying you're not going to have people walking around with that, and there was other people saying, well, Tis the Future, they're starting off there, but in 5 years' time, will it just be a normal pair of glasses that you can't tell if somebody's wearing it or not? So you've got to, I admit you've got to start somewhere. But you compare the kind of current version with this new version, and there's this horrible like mono ear pod that plugs into where the power is, and it looks, you look, you
but
look
that's
like
the
Borg.
Difference between concept. That's the difference between concept and the reality of producing these things at a volume and a price that people are going
to
buy.
But that mono ear, it's $50 to buy because their glass doors open. $50 for a mono earbud. Come
sounds,
on.
Sounds almost like Apple pricing.
But it looks, but yeah, you look like the Borg.
Yeah, so that, I mean, there's no denying this first iteration is not going to be sleek and attractive, I think, when it actually gets to public production. But nevertheless, I think, you know, like everything, things over time shrink and become, you know, more attractive, don't they, as that becomes more important to people. People will love this just to start with, just because of the novelty of it. But that's if it hasn't been banned everywhere, because it seems like everywhere bans these things as soon as they hear about them.
Well, did you hear about the speeding ticket in America?
No.
A cop gave somebody a speeding, not a speeding ticket, I think they gave him they pulled him over, gave him a ticket because they were wearing Google Glass.
Because of distraction or whatever.
Yep.
Well, what do you want to do? I mean, what about BMWs that have the head-up display? No real difference.
I would just, what about BMWs? Never mind head-up displays. I'd just give people a ticket for driving those.
They've launched another project. Google have launched a project with Motorola, their technology partner. Basically, their project ARA. Is that how you say it? ARA? ARA?
Probably I think it's ARA. ARA.
Yeah. ARA, maybe. Maybe it's ARA. Arrow. Throwing the arrows. Anyway, they have announced this project, which is a modular hardware device. So effectively, you get a what they're calling a matrix that you can then plug in battery, you can plug in screen, you can plug in keyboard, and effectively configure your own device.
Yep. And there was some, did you ever, I don't think we covered it in the podcast, there was a kind of company called Phone Blocks. So this is from a Dutch designer. He says, reading the show notes, Dave Hackens. This kind of popped up 3-4 months ago. And he had this concept of, you know, if you want a better camera, at the expense of something else, you know, maybe battery life, then swap that in if you want a bigger screen or a smaller screen, or, you know.
That sounds like a Kickstarter that never could have happened.
And it was a bit like that, but what he was looking to do was develop this kind of make the phone you want, which is obviously compromised. And seemingly Motorola had been kicking around this project for a while as well. So they got in touch, they've joined forces, and they're going to try and push it forward into where can we take this?
Yeah, and it's like I say, it's innovative. You can plug in a different, you know, processor or whatever. You could give yourself more power, give more battery life, all those kind of nice things. So, an interesting concept, but I don't think it will give people the device they want at the end of the day, which is something nice and compact. I've said it before. Here's my top tip for the future. Is going to be, we'll be carrying around personal processor units, which is a device a bit like a phone, but no screen on it. And you can then use multiple screens. Anything you're near, it can use as a screen kind of thing. I think that's where things are going. So if you bring your personal processor, you sit by your big desktop screen and that uses that. If you're out and about, you've got a little screen that's like your phone. Can even attach to your Pebble.
Did I tell you about the new domain I've just signed up for? It's called Future Chris.
There you go, Future Chris. Anyway, I think that's where things are going. So form factor will become, you know, you'll carry one thing, which is your form factor, and another thing, which is actually the processing. So there you go. That's my tip. Automatic video editing now for Google Plus. So as well as doing all their kind of auto photo editing that they've been doing with all their photos, they're now thinking about doing it with videos. And they will even add music. They'll chop your videos. They'll pick out what it thinks are the key areas of your videos and probably stabilize and things like that as well. Or you can control it yourself. But so it will try and do it itself. Or you can do it yourself. Sounds good.
It does. I've only tried the awesome stuff a couple of times. I really should. In fact, I've got the perfect set of pictures from your catering weekend.
See what it does with them. Yeah.
Because I did take like 80 pictures when you were waving trophy Woodbury. In the air. There's a couple of crackers in there. I must actually get them online. But Auto Awesome, I don't know. It's all about hit and miss. But I don't like. You go to Google Plus now and everybody's putting like GIFs on, and it's just this page of everything's moving, and it's like, my eyes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, because that was the whole problem with the old web, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Animated GIFs seem to take over the world. Yes. So being an embedded user of Android, obviously everything gets shoved up now automatically, auto backup. And I have to say that every time I've seen an auto enhance, it's done a good job. It's made good decisions, much, much better decisions than I would have ever thought possible. Just thinking about it, as in, you know, if you revert back to the original, you can see the changes it's made, and it's made in clever decisions. When I heard about this initially, I thought it was a big gimmick, but actually I now believe that they probably can do all this.
And I mean, it wasn't, so this is awesome for video, but they've improved the online photo editing again. So it's actually turning into, I mean, it's not Lightroom. It's almost like kind of...
But it's Lightroom enough for everyday people. It's not like your professional, although they've got professional filters in there. They bought Nik filter collection.
Yeah, they bought Nik software, and there's a couple of new Nik filters came out, and there's an HDR option now. I mean, you try it. I compared some of the stuff I'd done in Lightroom, and it's not far away. It's like, that was instant, and I spent a minute.
The speed of this. And say for the majority of people who aren't, you know, going to be distributing out to magazines and stuff like that, it's easily enough, and it makes it so easy just to then share it. Although obviously sharing it on Google Plus is a bit like sharing it in a magazine that never gets read.
Well, they did say that it now has 540 million active users monthly.
Yeah, sure, because auto backup puts all the files there.
With 300 million of them participating in the stream.
Yeah, well, okay, shared on your screen. Yeah, it's, you know, blah. It's all, all know that it's not, even though you've got users, and maybe that's what they're going to end up being. They're just going to be this repository for information rather than the place where you go and view that information. You store it in Google, share it on Facebook.
I'd still dip in daily to Google Plus. I actually still get quite a lot of things surfaced up from there that I don't
get
elsewhere.
I go there for my photos, whatever I've taken on my mobile. That's about it, really.
Hangouts. So we shouldn't not mention Hangouts. So it's got quite a nice upgrade, actually.
Yeah, it has.
So we're doing this, and it's we've now got a kind of Chromeless video.
I have Ian's face big and proud in the middle of my monitor. Rather than surrounded by buff.
Is that what you really think of me?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, thanks.
So when you hover your mouse over, you get back the, you know, the menu items and you get a bit more control over how much bandwidth you want things to use. It looks like a really nice upgrade. So
I still so much love Hangouts compared to, you know, Skype and everything else.
And we were talking earlier about Xbox One and how some people are reporting that Live is being a bit screwed around with. You know what? Skype used to work and now doesn't. So, I mean, that's unfair to say it doesn't work full stop, but it's extremely frustrating user experience now, whereas it used to be better, which is unfortunate. And Skype is going to be integrated into Xbox One, and it makes you wonder...
It does.
Is that the kind of user experience we're going to start having, which is it kind of works but often lets you down?
And I heard two clips, and it was the same voice over Xbox 360 and Xbox One, and certainly over One, the clarity was fantastic. It sounded like really good, but it has to be robust. You know,
yeah, I was going to say, I don't need a really robust voice channel as long as my Xbox game is playing well on Live.
Exactly.
They've announced Nexus 5 as well. They've released it, in fact. So this is their latest Nexus device, their core Google, this nothing but Google.
And your primary phone's a Nexus 4?
Yes, I'm a Nexus 4 user.
So is that about a year old then? Is it a year since Nexus 4 came out?
I've gone on to, it's longer than that, because I've gone on to my own, I'm probably in about 18 months in. To having this Nexus 4.
Ah, yeah, there we go. It was offered May 2000. Oh, no. Oh, no, that's rubbish.
Anyway, I'm sure I'm about 18 months in anyway to my contract. So it's a while since the last one was released.
No, it's actually a year. October 29th, 2012.
How have I come outside the contract then? Anyway, whatever. Whatevs. That's because I bought it out of contract. Yes, because I'm now on it. There we go. 349, they're saying, for the 16 gig model, and 399 for the 32 gig model. So although they're saying the build quality is lower than something like an iOS 5 and generally not quite up there with the best, those prices are about half of an iPhone.
Yeah, because I mean, the cheapest... the cheapest 5S is what, 530?
Yeah. And that's it's gonna be 16 gig again, yeah.
Yep.
So yeah, so it's cheaper by a considerable margin. Again, these prices make it good as a, you know, a non-contract phone basically.
Yeah, because you're buying this unlocked.
And you can have your own contract.
And I guess we should add, it only just came out. It only just got announced like 10 minutes before we started.
Yes.
And I guess it'll work in any carrier. And the interesting thing, it works with LTE. So last year's Nexus 4 got a lot of flak because it didn't have LTE.
It had some sort of 4G connection, but I'm not sure which ones.
Yeah, I think it was one of these ones that they talked about might be enabled later on, but to keep the price down, they decided it's 3G only. And I think a lot of the sort of tech sites were saying, you know, bad decision. But
if you're going to release a new phone this often, then it's fine.
Yep.
Really, and for the number of people that actually end up using it at the moment, it's definitely, you know, they're in the sweet spot at the moment, and now they've released it with LTE, so it's fine. It's running KitKat, so we'll talk about KitKat as well. But hardware wise, they're basically saying it's nice to hold. It's bigger, but it doesn't feel that much bigger in the hand. It doesn't feel unduly big, and it's got soft touch, so you can actually grip this thing.
So was the Nexus 4 done by LG?
Yes.
So is the Nexus 5. It's a 5-inch screen, 1080p resolution, and seemingly they're saying the bezel is like tiny. And when you see the pictures of it, it does look really, you know.
And that's how you make a screen bigger without making it feel that much bigger.
Yep. I mean, it's like it's almost edge to edge, and it looks front wise, it looks screen wise, looks really, really nice.
Yeah, and like I say, I don't think people are that overly bothered about having. I mean, apparently it's very light feel as well. And we know, well, we said before that actually having nice heavy things gives you that sort of sense of solidity. But I think consumer market will like this again if they can get it out there, because, say, Samsung are romping it.
But at the same time, I've seen lots of people that I follow on Twitter saying ordered.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're coming into that region where, but it's Twitter users that will like this kind of thing, or, you know, gadget people, which is who you follow most. But KitKats are on there as well. So KitKats only going to be this on the Nexus 5 to start with, but it will be rolled out to older Android devices over time.
Yep. So this is Android 4.4. So this is actually quite a big upgrade.
I think it's one of those underlying upgrades it's not necessarily going to look that much different, but there's new features and more things have been brought in line. Okay. I think we talked about it a while back because we talked about KitKat, because it changed from whatever it was going to be, key lime pie, wasn't it?
Yeah. Sellouts.
So it's had design tweaks rather than a massive overhaul. Dialer now comes with added features, so you basically get your contact information straight into the dialer.
Yes. So I'm guessing the way that works is you're actually dialing a number and it's trying to like autocomplete.
It'd be like autocomplete for numbers, I'm sure.
Yeah. But it's what I really liked about that was they're actually taking the information they've got. So they're great at search. They've got loads of information and they're actually making it easier to use. You know, so instead of saying go and search for something, it's like, oh, you're dialing a number? Let me just search that for you at the same time, even though you don't really think you're searching. And it's that kind of, to me, that's like, that's the changes I want in an operating system.
Proper integration, yeah.
It's not just, so I mean, I've already kind of briefed over that there are some design changes and some things have gone, you know, translucent and other bits and pieces. And it's like, yeah, that's great. But give me the things that I'm going to use day in, day out that make this easy to use. And this is one of them.
I didn't even think that typing in a number would have been that made that much easier by having a contact list there. And there it is. It's done. And it feels much better, yeah. Google Now. Basically, you can actually get to it easier rather than having to actually swipe to get to it. You can swipe left on from your home screen. And basically, it's got more integration, so it can now pull data in better and you can talk to it now. You can ask it to come to life.
Yes, yeah, so you can say...
Google.
Yeah, which will be interesting. And I don't know if that's just on phones or whether that's going to be in my Nexus 7. You know, is it going to sit there and be able to monitor and hear me saying, okay, Google, and then just start searching?
To do this without breaking privacy, I'm sure it has to have some sort of, it's got to have a local listening loop or something, hasn't it, rather than generally be listening. Anyway, but, Xbox does it, the same thing with its Kinect, you know, just it's constantly ready to constantly ready to jump to your rescue.
But does that mean if I'm sitting there in my room and I've got that installed and I've got my Xbox One, if I say okay, Google Xbox, that they'll all just spring into life?
And then you can do a multiple search across multiple devices. Yeah. Oh, I like it. They talked about this again at I/O, and I'm sure they said it was going to be in the previous version of Android. So the fact that it's now in this latest one, we'll see. But it kind of makes again an interesting thing of just being sat there and just being able to say, okay, Google, and then type, you know, to search without having to actually touch your phone, anything.
And the nice thing is that they've talked about the search isn't just web search. They're going to start to look at your apps and the data you're holding within your apps as well. So the example that I've pasted in the show notes, so when you search, Google can now direct you straight to not only appropriate website, but the right app. So the search for a recipe and it takes to the recipe in the app. Search for a restaurant and it goes into the OpenTable app. So rather than doing these multiple steps, it's saying, you actually just want to go here.
Yeah, and as long as it does know the best, because, you know, if you've got three table reservation apps, then, you know, they're going to start fighting.
But in principle, it sounds, again, really nice.
As long as it works in practice, that's the only thing, isn't it? You know, we'll see whether they can manage those things. Because, like I say, if you're a table reservation app, how do you make sure yours is the one that's called up? And how do they sort those arguments out? Hangouts is much more integrated. So basically, it's integrated into all their messaging and all their kind of communication. So effectively, Hangouts controls your SMS as well. So any SMS you're sending, I assume, goes and gets stored in your Hangouts profile, which is good and bad, I guess.
I think it's good. There was a little graph that I saw, and it showed you all the different communications options they had. And I remember when I got the Nexus 7, there was like the kind of three or four. There was like, you know, messages and Hangouts, and there was something else. I can't remember. There was like three or four. And they just showed you how over the last sort of year and a half, they went from 4 to 3 to 2, and it's now finally...
Because who cares where you're, you know, you really want your messages to appear everywhere you are, if that's, you know, the kind of person you are. And so if someone sends you a text, you really want it available wherever. So in the web browser, on your phone, here, there, and everywhere. So a bit like when you ring a Google Hangout and everything in my house seems to come to life. So yeah. So it all sounds good. It's using less memory. So it's, you know, more performant, all those kind of nice things. So I'm looking forward to getting it on my phone.
It sounds a really good update. A really, really good update. And they're saying it's going to take, over the next few weeks, it will start to come to the other Nexus devices and Google Play Edition devices.
And I wonder whether Samsung's decision is going to delay them getting the latest, you know, actual underlying operating system benefits. So that's another, you know, thing that they need to be careful of. Because if Google comes up with some kick-ass features, if they can't upgrade to it, then people aren't going to be happy.
I know they've been trying to handle that kind of fragmentation by starting to hive off other things into the Play Store. So it was...
Yes, and more and more features get as an app rather than as an actual embedded feature of your phone, which is fine.
Yep.
Okay, let's go to NSA now, but let's not completely discard Google, because basically
this is the last Google story. Yay!
And it involves other people, so it's fine. It's a bit share and share alike. And share and share alike, they're people's data, because that's what data hacking is still hot on everyone's lips. Basically, NSA have been seen to hook into Google's and Yahoo's actual internal fiber networks. So this is Google communicating between data centers, and the NSA has managed to hijack communications through those, which Google and Yahoo were pretty upset about, because
Google is outraged.
Outraged, in fact.
Outraged.
So basically they're hooking into those fiber networks, which are in effect are internal network fibers rather than internet fibers. And it's just going to mean that more and more Google are going to have to encrypt everything that moves around anywhere rather than just on the external internet, which is going to cost more and it's going to slow things down.
Yes. And there's now a bit of a witch hunt on about where have they actually... How have they managed to do this? So who is to blame? And if you look at the kind of way the internet is, the infrastructure works, what Google controls, what Yahoo controls, and then which one of these, you know, third party peering services has basically, you know, allowed these guys to hack in? And I guess that will ultimately leak out over the next, you know, few days, weeks, months. And as you said, it's just meaning Google is just going to, you know, end to end, it's just going to try and encrypt everything it can.
Yeah. I mean, as far as America goes, they're, you know, they're, the rules on spying, them spying outside of America are obviously a lot looser. And this is what they're kind of relying on. But inside the country, which is where this spying is taking place, the rules are a lot tighter. So they could even get into a bit of shtick for this, for doing it. Because it is US citizen data that they're spying on inside their own country, effectively. So, you know, it's all ugly. It's all pretty messy. We, you know, people are kind of on the news saying, well, that's what countries do. We spy. But it's, I think this is a whole new level being uncovered here of not just what's going on, but the capabilities behind it and what it actually means for everyone. You know,
and I mean, that actually, so the closing statement: we do not provide any government, including the US government, with access to our systems. We are outraged at the lens to which the government seems to have gone to intercept data from our private fiber networks, and it underscores the need for urgent reform.
Yeah, and what's worse is it's not the government. The government and ministers and president, they don't have any visibility on any of this. This all just happens, and it happens, you know, away from their visibility, and there's nothing anyone could do to stop these people.
The worst thing is
just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not out to get you.
There were some people, and I think we were kind of semi chuckling as well when Snowden's kind of leaks first came out, and they were talking about, you know, he could basically almost dial up a person and press a hack button and hack into what they were doing. Kind of looks like that was
fairly true. I mean, one thing that does come from this is, you know, you're kind of almost anonymous and private by the sheer quantity of data. Yet if they do want to start looking at who you are, what you're up to, and they could make that decision, and they've been proven to make that decision based on really, you know, bad things and pretty sinister things, not just because you're a bad person, but because they don't like something you said. It's all those kind of nasty undertones. Movies have been sold and made on this for years, and it just says that the movies have been right.
Yes.
Right, the Adobe breach, which they leaked, they eventually announced that they had lost a lot of users' data. It actually affected 38 million users, so it's a massive, massive leak.
Originally they said 3. They said 2.9.
So it's,
I'm sure it was 2.9.
They've missed a decimal point somewhere there, or they've misplaced a decimal point, as well as 38 million users' data. So it's sort of over time, people have been finding these lists that are effectively proving that there's more and more users that have been affected. And Adobe have gone and said, right, okay, we will let everybody know. They are hash passwords, but nevertheless, they're saying change all your passwords. But as worrying as that for them is the fact that Photoshop is one of the source codes that's been hacked or been taken away. So people out there have full access to one of the most popular bits of software to see how it functions, basically.
And just so we're clear, it started at 2.9. They're saying it's at least 38 million. And Aziz, the website I got this from is a security website. And they're talking about how that they downloaded a username and hash password pairs file from the weekend that included 150 million usernames.
Mm-hmm.
And they reckon it's all from Adobe. Oh, no, it's not Adobe. It's Adobe.
Yeah, it's Adobe. I checked.
Adobe, you're cocks.
But they're saying, they're trying to say, well, no, we've had no reports of any malicious behavior happening from these user accounts. Hey, it just sits there and festers. And not only that, it just means all your emails are just out there even more than they ever were before. Doesn't matter how protective you are over your email address. You're on a list somewhere.
Yep.
UK courts, more British phonographic industry asking for sites to be blocked, and courts offering warrants for 21 sites to be shut down by UK ISPs. Must be done, is it tomorrow?
Yesterday.
Yesterday?
So
tomorrow, I 2 days ago.
So the judgment was on the 29th, and it said, by the way, get this done by tomorrow. So,
and this is the BPI coming along saying, we want this shut down. And then a judge saying, okay. And we've seen before that the BPI do not get this right. They've blocked side, you know, other things. I can't remember. There was a big site shut down, wasn't there?
Wait, you're talking about Meg Upload?
No, it was a big site actually that got sideswiped by an IP that the BPI had passed onto a court and got blocked. Like WH Smith or something like that. It was a massive site that they were outraged that they got blocked. Or was it maybe a newspaper? Anyway, whatever. We're going to see more and more of this because it just seems like the judges are listening to the BPI.
I think it's, we said at the time that once the first one was passed, then they'll just cite previous examples and say, done it for this one, this is another example. They prove it's the same, and the guy's just going to go, yeah, take it down.
And they're also moaning, BPR moaning, that Google ranks sites like Pirate Bay even, you know, above above sites like Amazon, because they're saying that's not fair.
I'm not so sure. I did some searching for some albums, and honestly, as long as you don't put torrent in the word.
So yes, you're not specifically looking for a torrent. Yep. So you, yeah. So anyway, blah. And these, I mean, a lot of the sites they've been taking down are aggregators of, you know, just they're not necessarily, they're not hold, these sites aren't holding files, but they're just, you know, being seen to give access to or point to files that exist.
The daft thing, this is so trivial to work around it that it's pointless.
Yes. But there we go. They're still, like I say, they're pinging these things out left, right, and center. Dell users. Are you a Dell user? You're not a Dell user.
Thankfully not.
No. Because
even my work laptop isn't a Dell, it's a fantastic HP.
Due to a manufacturing issue, probably unforeseen, they made their new Latitude laptop smell of cat piss.
And the thing is, this isn't like the 300 quid kind of Chromebook or netbook type.
No, this is their top ultrabooks. End.
Top end.
Yep. And apparently it just, once it got warm, it just started smelling like a cat litter tray. Apparently it was very embarrassing to take into client meetings.
I'm sure it was.
Someone swore that their cat had sprayed it by the smell coming off of it. But it turns out it was just something they were using in manufacturing.
Can you imagine it if you walked in and you're like, Chris, you smell of piss. No, it's just my laptop. Don't worry about it.
So anyway, they have since changed their method. So they've said it's not hazardous to your health. So live with it.
I thought it was quite a unique feature. Shit laptops smell a piss.
Brilliant. That's the end of the news. We've got to the end of the news. So let's have a look at the picks. You have two picks for us this week, one for each of us.
I had two because there was no stories this week.
There we go. We still managed to drag out no stories for over half an hour. Well done, us.
Fantastical 2 for iPhone. And I guess there's a little bit of controversy right now with iOS 7 coming out, and that some of the developers are reskinning, redoing apps and charging for it.
Right.
And the recharging isn't that much. You know, so Fantastical came out about a year and a half ago. Great calendar app. It was one of the first to have like the natural input. So you could, you know, I could say, join Chris and Henry for podcast
in a couple
Thursday.
Of days' time.
And it would put it in the right place and sorted it all out. Worked really well. And version 2 is now out, and it includes reminders. So you fire it up and you see your calendar and reminders all in one place. Really nice UI. Really locks in with iOS 7 feels like at one. Instantly I was just like, ooh, that's now my calendar app. And also it meant I moved away to reminders as well. So I'm now actually ditching a few other things as well. And it's like, this is enough. That's actually works really well for me. So $199. And just buy it. Stop moaning about like developers fleecing.
Using expensive application at $199.
So tweet.
But I'll go down to the pub and pay £4 on a pint.
Tweetbot got reskinned, and the amount of people that were like, "This is a disgrace. I paid $199 for this 3 years ago, and I'm having to pay for it again."
And
damn
I use
you.
It every day, and I love it. Yeah. But I'm not willing to spend more than a. I mean, people spend more on trick or treating tonight, probably.
Absolutely. And my second kind of pick. Is if you're an O2 user, Evernote have partnered with O2, so you can get 12 months of Evernote Premium for free.
Ah, okay, good.
Which is quite nice.
Yeah, might see an injection of users there.
And so it works if you've got an O2 account, or if you've got an O2 business. So I had an O2 business number, and I tried it, and it worked. So I was a premium user, and it's added another 12 months on.
There we go.
And so yeah, so trot along to. Trot along to either O2 or Evernote site and you'll see a link. And I'll put a link in the show notes as well.
I was trying to think of the equivalent of an elephant trotting, because they don't really trot.
Rumble? No.
Do they hoot along?
Loiter?
Rumble along? Anyway, whatever. That is the end of the podcast. Thanks for those picks. You can find out more about us at www.digitaloutbox.com. You may talk to us if you wish. Email info@digitaloutbox.com. You can Twitter and Skype us as well on Digital Outbox. I am on Twitter as CheesyUK, and all my racing goodness is on academyracer.co.uk. Ian, where do we find you?
My blog is iand.net, where I will reveal my stunning decisions around an iPad soon. And my...
Your decisions? You mean you're buying an iPad Air?
Yeah. Yeah. And...
What you heard it here first.
Well, you didn't, because if I blog about it tonight, you'll have read about it, and I'll publish this tomorrow. Yeah!
Whatever.
Get it up, you. And Twitter is cheaper.
Perfect. So have a fabulous... Well, I hope you had a fabulous Halloween. We certainly have. It's been fun. It's been emotional. We will speak to you again next week. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
And I go and eat all the sweets that no one's actually knocked on my door to pick up yet.